because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in politics in the Capitol. J.R., the number, it used to be called food stamps. Mm-hmm. Now it's called food share. Okay.
Yes.
The numbers have been dramatically increasing in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So the Republicans changed it for accountability and to prevent abuse and to aid in what they say is the skills gap, job training. So the first report on what happened came out. Do you remember the numbers? There's pretty significant changes.
Well, Walker has been stressing the almost 12,000 people who found work through job training. What he has been stressing is the 41,000 plus who lost eligibility because they did not meet the work requirements now. There are several options, if you will, mm-hmm. in the program. 80 hours of work training. You know, these are talking able-bodied adults, you know, people who are
able-bodied adults with no children, 18 to 49.
So that's all you got to do is go out and do this, they say, and you should be able to keep your eligibility and help you find a job. But those folks are being rolled off because you have basically any 3 months in the period in which you don't meet the requirement, once you hit three of them, you're off.
Yep.
So this is the first look at, like, what cumulative effect, if you will, the first year the program has been.
So reading from the summary of that Department of Health Services report, it's really intriguing. So you have to have a work requirement. Mm-hmm. You have to be taking classes, vocational training, but the work, how they define work is very intriguing. Work is defined as work in exchange for money, work in exchange for goods or services, unpaid work as a volunteer or community service, self-employment, or any combination of the above. That's just pretty interesting.
And what's also interesting is this is part of an overall kind of package with Hewlett Walker, which he's been trying to move our safety net programs away from a straight cash benefit to you have to do something or you have to pass a test or the drug testing he wants to do with various programs. That's still, by the way, hung up in the federal courts.
Yeah.
All these things are new to try and, in his words, get people out of these programs and into the workforce to fill jobs because, oh, by the way, we have 100,000 open jobs. I can't remember what the number is he uses every week very much, but we have a skills gap. We need to fill these jobs. How do we fill these jobs? This is one way he talked about doing it.
Yeah, and here's what Governor Walker said about that. The new report from DHS, our welfare reform program provides participants with the opportunity to learn life skills, helping them to succeed. And, of course, Democrats are questioning whether this is an unfair program. Democratic Representative Deb Kolsky, I'm really concerned that they are kicking people off that still will continue to need help, and they're just going to know a lot more food insecurity. So as you were saying, this is part of a package which includes a one-week wait to get unemployment benefits. Mm-hmm. So over the last 6 years, they've just been tightening and demanding more accountability.
Remember, there are also a half dozen bills this session that died after passing the Assembly that would have done things like, you know, change how you expunge benefits and food shares. You know, change how often you get a car, a replacement car if you lose one. I mean, all these things because they see it as a program rife with fraud. Democrats see it as a lifeline. And they feel like Republicans are basically constricting, if you will, the people who are on this program who are basically, in their minds, vulnerable citizens and cutting off needed aid.
Good election year issue, things like this?
Good question. I think for the Republicans, it's good for their base because the base is always suspicious of this fraud going on. There's something happening down there. And any story you see about, like, cards being sold, if you will, on the internet, that kind of thing, that probably excites them. But as far as like what's going to drive people to the polls, probably not the biggest issue in the top 10 list.
Okay. Now let's look ahead to Monday in the courtroom of Dane County Judge William Faust. The Department of Justice, Attorney General Brad Schimel's lawyers, is going to ask for an emergency stay of Faust's ruling that the right to work law is unconstitutional. I was very surprised by that ruling. Rewind was off for a week. It came down in that 1 week period. Yeah. Were you surprised by that?
Yes and no. I mean, other courts have upheld right to work laws. We are in Wisconsin, though, and Dane County has a little more of a liberal bent, if you will, to the judiciary. So it has not been. Conservatives joke the way you pass a law in Wisconsin anymore is you go Assembly, Senate, Governor, Dane County Court, then Supreme Court. So it's become the almost required stop, if you will. Now, what's interesting is Faust issued his ruling, then had to do the final order. And so what happens to this is that the winning party writes the order, the losing party has some input, and then Faust says, okay, this is what I want to do in the end. Schimel wanted to stay right away.
Yes.
He said, don't even let this go into order in effect at
prior
all.
Prior to the final order.
Yes, so you go ahead in your final order, put in this is not in effect. Faust said no, kicked it out, so now we have the hearing on Monday to see if they'll get grant the relief they're seeking because they have already indicated they're going to appeal to the Third District Court of Appeals in space in Wausau. Remember, Republicans back in, I think, 11, they took over, changed the law. So it used to be wherever you appealed the case or it was heard in circuit court, it went to that appeals court, which meant a lot of state laws went through Dane County Circuit Court, 4th District based in Madison, then the Supreme Court. Well, now you can pick where you want to go.
Yeah, it's called venue shopping. Yes. Go ahead.
So they're going to 3rd up in Wausau for the appeal.
I was very surprised to read Faust's ruling. He said that labor is a commodity that can be regulated. Assembly Speaker Voss, of course, called this the rant or the rulings of a liberal judge, and Governor Walker said this will be upheld.
I would, if you ask most people in the Capitol, once you get to the state Supreme Court, it'll likely be upheld. You know, the law will be back in the books, but it's a matter of time and when it gets there and all that kind of good stuff.
Well, it was interesting because defending the need for a stay, Attorney General Schimmel said, given that 25 other states have right-to-work laws and none of those have been declared unconstitutional, I am confident Wisconsin's law will be upheld. It's imperative that Wisconsin's right-to-work law remain in effect while on appeal. But arguing for voiding the right-to-work law, Phil Neuenfeld of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, if we want a strong economy, we should be strengthening unions so that workers can continue to collectively negotiate better workplaces for future generations. Is this another big issue for the election?
Yes and no. Again, good base issue for folks, but the reality is that unions lost that fight. You know, I mean, yes, they have a shot in court, but I don't think most people I talk to are going to tell you that, yes, the unions will win when it goes to the appeals court and go to the Supreme Court, and actually, well, a year from now, I'll be sitting here in a state without right to work. All right, all the Republicans are in charge. It's going to happen. Which also, interesting tangent, what frustrates some progressives that they didn't come out more in force in the Supreme Court race a couple weeks ago because you lost a shot to have a more friendly justice, if you will, on cases like this. When you get Republican passed laws that you don't like and challenge them, you're not going to get a friendly audience at the Supreme Court with a 5-2 conservative majority. It's just not there right now.
It wasn't, okay, a new topic. It really wasn't page one news, but I found it intriguing. The new John Doe law says that any John Doe can only run for 6 months or you have to seek an extension.
Yes.
But who has to approve the extension is a majority of the 10 chief judges in our 10 circuit court regions. So, was this the first casualty where this new law shut down the state probe of problems at the Lincoln Hill Juvenile Prison?
Now, not being inside the investigation, can't tell you for sure what happened there, but Governor Walker made the point this week of what DOJ didn't need it, essentially. You know, we had what we, their FBI is still going strong with this, so it's going to be fine. So we'll see when it plays out, but that's their argument, at least for right now, on it.
And the U.S. attorney said the end of the John Doe does not affect the federal investigation. Mm-hmm. But the wild card, JR, isn't it? We have no idea when the results of the federal probe are going to be released. They could be released in October, weeks before the election.
Oh, same thing with the John Doe, though. There's no deadline to act. Now, there is now,
yes,
but back
to
the old
months,
system.
If you don't seek an extension.
You know, I mean, the John Doe with Governor Walker, John Doe 1 about Milwaukee County, that went on for, what, 2 or 3 years? So, I mean, you know, it's not uncommon to see these things go on for a while.
Yeah, but I'm going to ask you the question for the third time in a row. If this comes out weeks before the election and it's a real mess with charges as a result of the Lincoln Hill probes filed by the feds, is
who
this an issue
blamed?
Who gets the blame?
Now,
Walker's not
in
up.
Charge. Yes, so do Republicans get blamed because of the same party? But it's Walker's administration, that's going to be an issue. And Dems are going to hammer them because, look, they've been calling for hearings, saying we should be doing things, and they're not. So that will be... It would not be good for Republicans if that happens in October.
Well, if there are charges as a result of the federal probe, does it give Senator Tom Tiffany, who's up for re-election, in that section of Wisconsin some potential major problems?
Possibly. Again, it depends on where's the mud fly, whose shoes get dirty, if you will know this.
Okay. Okay, new topic. Do you think the governor gritted his teeth to say, I'll support the Republican nominee? What did he actually say? I will support the Republican running against Hillary Clinton in the fall. Whoever that is, it's preferable to have a Republican nominee over Hillary Clinton.
It's probably,
with gritted teeth.
Probably easier to say I will not vote for Hillary Clinton, but yes. So, I mean, you know, remember, Walker got out in September saying, others follow me, we need to stop Trump. Well, nobody took Trump that seriously at the time, apparently. Maybe he was a canary in the coal mine, if you will, about this guy, it needs to be stopped soon. And look, here he is. He just won New York in big fashion. And now we're talking, he's brought in Rick Wiley.
Yes.
Walker's little campaign manager. He's brought in new, like, kind of connected people.
Wiley has shaved his goatee, by the way. Go ahead.
I've not seen that. That's sad. Sorry to hear that. But he's brought in more professional people who are maybe can reach the RNC. They had a meeting this week. Donald Trump's people did with the RNC to kind of say, we can expand the map. Maybe they're figuring out, okay, we need to get our stuff together. this last kind of couple months to have a shot, because if it gets past that first vote on the floor of the convention in Cleveland in July, it's tough to see that Donald Trump pulls it out. Maybe he can, but the party is not a Trump party right now.
So. But at this Milwaukee news conference, I did not see that our governor actually mouthed two words, Donald Trump. Yeah. At number one. Number two, he waited till after the New York primary, Trump's primary win. So this is still, this is not a 100%.
Oh, he's not
embracing
Trump. He's all in for Ted Cruz. And his Penn stuff for him, supported him, endorsed him here, was good for him. I think somebody asked him simply about Trump, and Walker kind of gave like the yes, you know, even if it's him. But yes, he is not an enthusiastic backer of Donald Trump. What will be interesting to see is if Trump's the nominee, how does the establishment react here in Wisconsin come November? I've heard the argument that he did well, like in the 3rd and 7th congressional districts. So Maybe those blue-collar white voters who tend to vote Democratic, maybe they can peel them back. But what's going to happen in southeastern Wisconsin, where you have the Republican base and all those folks don't like Donald Trump? Actually, they loathe Donald Trump, but they also loathe Hillary Clinton. What are they going to do? Are they going to turn out and vote? Or does Ron Johnson have to like pull those guys out and stitch together some kind of crazy, you know, path to victory where he takes care of the base because they can't stand Trump, and Trump peels off these like normally Democratic voters to help run? It could be a mess.
Well, beyond mess, I see this as a potential dilemma for Governor Walker. He wants to keep the idea that he can seek a third term in 2018. He wants to keep his name mentioned nationally. He likes this national prominence.
Right.
He hasn't ruled out running. You can say he's beginning to take steps, especially if he's reelected, to run for president in 2020. So what does he do if Trump's the nominee in the 2 months before? Does he just hold his nose and stump in Wisconsin? Does he go national?
Good question. But now, interestingly, about Walker in 2018, he keeps like inching toward the announcement. We caught him on primary night at Cruz's event, and he said, like, people were asking him about running. I'd love to run in 2018. And he talked to townhall.com, it's a conservative outlet, and they asked him, are you likely to run in 2018? And he said, absolutely, basically. You know, absolutely I'm likely to run, you know. No decision until after the election this fall. Now, here's the thing you mentioned, though, I bring up, about running in 2020 if you're Scott Walker. He has said you cannot run for president when you're in a third term. You can't do it. So, now, Walker also has said, when he was county executive, when he was governor, don't ask me about those running for the other offices. I'm not interested.
And Paul Ryan didn't want to be U.S. Speaker either.
So Walker, if let's do some ifs, if Donald Trump loses in 2016, if Governor Walker wins in 2018, I'm not sure how Governor Walker talks his way out of the box to run in 2020. So that'll be interesting to see. Maybe he can. Other politicians have, but it could be a tough one to climb for him.
Absolutely fascinating. Okay, before we get to your stock picks, it's beginning to look like there are some absolutely fascinating races shaping up here. Mm-hmm. The filing deadline isn't until June 1, and I understand that, and anything can happen. But let's take a look at a few of those. Number one, 8th Congressional District Republican primary. State Senator Frank Lissay and challenger Mike Gallagher. Now, you are fascinated by the fundraising total.
Oh,
why?
Yeah.
Why?
Mike Gallagher, who was born in the district in Green Bay, but grew up in California, came back in the summer. His dad's still up there, I believe. Marine veteran, Foreign Relations Committee Senate aide in the Senate, Governor Walker advisor for his gubernatorial campaign. He raised $520,000 in his first couple of months after announcing his bid.
$520,000?
None of that from his own pocket. I think only $2,500 or less from a PAC. It means it's all individual money.
Now, who loves him?
Well, he's got all kinds of D.C. connections. We haven't seen the actual report to break it down yet.
Okay.
But the assumption is he's got D.C. connections. He's also got Reed Ripple behind him, the current congressman. Mark Green and John Gard, who ran for that office in 06 and 08. So you add up that kind of coalition, you can see where he's getting some support, you know, between those guys from the district and the national folks. Now, the thing is, he's never run for office before. He's got to work a rope line.
He's got to be defined. He's got to come out as the anti-Lissay.
There's that. Now, Frank Lissay, he raised $160,000. What's interesting about that is Friday night, I'm working late in my office on some not work stuff. Get an email from his campaign, raise $115,000. Talks about how end of the session was tough and he had hip surgery.
Yeah.
3 days later, whoa, we raised $160,000. Now, that 160 is more than Reed Ripple raised his first quarter as a candidate for that office before the 2010 election. It's a good number, but it's blown away what Gallagher pulled in.
Yeah.
Now,
160 to 520.
We've not seen anything from Tom Nelson yet. The Democrats announced that seat. he won't have to put anything out for another 3 months because he just got in after the deadline. He's a good fundraiser. It's going to be a very expensive race up there and could be the really the one of the races to watch in Wisconsin, nationally even.
Gallagher's 520 raced over the 1 or 2 months, first quarter?
He got in February.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, I am sure he laid the foundation. Any candidate does, where the first month or so, but you, or before you announce, you've already got pledges, if you will, money's going to come in. So what a lot of this was, I won't say easy money, but it was money that's easy, you know, low-hanging fruit. The question is, can he keep it up? Where does he go for it from here? Stuff to watch.
Well, Trump, of course, talks about the Washington Republican Party establishment. Does Gallagher's 520,000 raised, does that, is Frank Lissay going to say he's a creature, he's a handpicked candidate of the Washington establishment?
I have heard that argument that Lissay should bring it up. He's also not from the district. Now, Lissay has faced complaints before, filed the GAB about where does he live?
Owning property, you know, in Racine.
So there's that issue. Could Frank Lissay really use that issue in a race like that? But Gallagher, you know, he, again, was born in the district, spent his summers there. His family has deep roots, but he doesn't. So that'll be one issue for him to work on. Also, the D.C. thing can be interesting because Lissay's been in office for almost all but four of the last 22 years in the state, either Assembly or the Senate. So yeah. Can he be the anti-Washington guy when he is a career politician, essentially? Can Gallagher be the anti-establishment guy when he's been in D.C., when he's been working for, you know, foreign relations, and he's been working for Walker's campaign? That stuff to get a message to watch, if you will.
What are you told? Do you think that we've seen all the candidates into the race with Senator Frank and Mike Gallagher and Tom Nelson on the Democratic side?
Gallagher's money probably scared anybody off on the Republican side if they're thinking about it, and Nelson is a preferred candidate for Democrats. So if somebody else gets in, Nelson's going to be the guy they want. The DCCC wants him in. That's why they pushed him to get in the race.
Okay, now let's look at the other end of the state in State Senate District 32, where Democratic Senate Leader Jennifer Schilling, Republican former Senator Dan Kopanky, who she took out in a recall in 2011, has announced that he's going to run again. Now, he has a primary, but Dan owns the La Crosse Loggers.
Yep.
He's a former state senator. Mm-hmm. He's pretty popular, having won that district once.
He was.
Well, I just see this as fascinating. Why is Kopanky getting into it?
Good question. I think he got a lot of encouragement to do it. Now, Republicans will argue that Dan Kopanky can rise above the fray. He did win that seat in 04 and 08 when we had, you know, presidential years, 08 especially. Obama won the state by 14 points. Kopanky won like 51, 52%. So he could do well in an environment like that. Here's the thing, though. Since Kopanky won in 08, he ran for Congress in 2010 against Ron Kind, lost. During that campaign, it came up that, A, taxpayers picked up $38,000 in legal bills because he screwed up on open records thing.
Yep.
B, he had an ethics complaint because he was using foundation money that took money from lobbyists to pay off a loan from the city of La Crosse to pay for improvements at the Loggers Park. That's a little of an issue. There's the Act 10 stuff where he was kind of seen as being a little like not quite partisan, a little like more a guy you like next door.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of the Act 10 fight, dove in head first, part of that. And then you go to 2011, the recall. Remember, in the recall elections, there's a certain segment of the base or the population did not like the process. So he... And so Walker won, and the thought was that some people voted for him because they didn't like the idea of recalling him because of a decision he made. But anything illegal,
right.
It's a decision. Kopanky lost by 9 points, even with that segment of the population didn't like the process. So where is this guy now in terms of popularity? Has the lens changed on him that he's not viewed as any more of good guy Dan, but partisan Dan who had this ethics problem? I mean, some machine's been taken off, if you will. I do get the impression from folks that this will keep Schilling busy.
Yes, which means she won't be able to be as active in the 18th, the open Gudeck seat, against Tiffany and against Republican Senator Harsdorf on the border with Minnesota.
So she's got to raise now. They've got plenty of surrogates to send out.
So the Republicans, do you think, are keeping Jennifer home?
Oh, I think they think that there's an opportunity there with Kopanky. I mean, I don't think he'd just go like just for the heck of it would run. They must see a path. But the path is not very wide right now. Bar now, the environment goes crazy in October, different story. But right now, the path is not wide for Dan Kopanky.
I was surprised Kopanky's getting back in. Were you?
I had heard he was getting encouragement to do it. And asking people so far, I understand the Republican argument of he's got a path. I just don't, at this point, see a wide one that it makes sense in a presidential year when the lines have also, Wisconsin's changed since he won. It's gotten more... The partisan lines have been drawn more sharply, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how that works.
Okay, I want to talk about two primaries in the city of Milwaukee involving African-American leaders. I'm absolutely fascinated by it. State Senate District 6. The current incumbent, Senator Harris Dodd, is not seeking re-election.
After
she has
term.
A young son. Mm-hmm. She's after one term. Now you have the former president of the Milwaukee School Board, MPS, Michael Bonds, challenging Representative LaTanya Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Bonds want this?
It's a safe seat that once you win it, you have it for life, essentially, as long as you want to be there.
Right.
Now, I'll be interested to see if anybody else gets in. It's only two right now. I think last time there was a primary, there was like four candidates, give or take a couple. So it could be a wide open race, fascinating to watch. But again, it is some of these seats are so safe anymore.
Yeah.
Once you win a primary, as long as you keep take care of your left or right flank, you're good to go.
Okay, but can't Representative Johnson, can't she say, look at Michael Bond's record
how
MPS didn't get appreciably better, and you could argue in some ways got worse on his watch?
Oh, I think LaTanya's going to get a lot of the establishment support, you know, out of Madison, that kind of thing. So sitting lawmakers usually have an edge in those races, so I would watch. I'd say she might be the favorite right now, but again, we'll see how August rolls around, that primary.
Yeah, the August primary. Okay, another primary. We have talked about the decision by mm-hmm. Representative Mandela Barnes, to challenge Senator Lena Taylor. Now, we've talked about it from the Barnes side, so I want to ask you this question, JR. What issues can Lena use against Mandela?
Experience. He's been there 3 years, not quite four, is in his second term. What's he gotten done? What bills he passed? Now, being the minority, it's hard to get any bill passed at all. But what has he done? He doesn't have the experience that I do. I am a 13-year incumbent who's got all this experience. I'm a fighter for you.
I also chair Joint Finance, albeit for a few months.
Yep, on the Joint Finance Committee. If they take me out, Milwaukee may lose its voice on the Budget Committee. Now, if that happened, they'd have to kind of, the leadership would have to look and see how to kind of take care of that. But yeah, it'd be a loss for Milwaukee in that regard.
This has a potential, Barnes versus Taylor, to be a pretty nasty thing, doesn't it?
Oh,
it,
there are all kinds of subtexts of, you know, the Families Working Party, for example, in Milwaukee County, that would it get involved and do a lot of stuff, the turnout stuff. You know, Chris Larson and Lena have had a tense relationship for a while now, if you will. There's that whole thing. I mean, you start dividing up that district, there is a chunk that's in Shorewood, which turns out in huge numbers. The other two, some of the districts don't really turn out in huge numbers.
Yep.
So, you know, there are racial undertones with that as well. It's all kinds of stuff. That's fun to watch with that race if you're a junkie.
Well, I'm also interested. I believe the treasurer of Mandela's race is Sandy Pash.
Mm-hmm.
She was treasurer of Senator Chris Larson's race against Chris Abley.
She also held that Shorewood district and faced a primary challenge from African American who seems to be backed by Lena. So there's all kinds of subtext to this, if you will.
Well, and we're talking here about an August primary, mm-hmm. so. Maybe very low turnout.
Turnout, I was surprised. I actually went back and looked. The last one was a primary for this race in 2004. I think it was a 3 or 4 way primary. There are 20,000 votes. Now, the thing is, though.
Only 20,000 vote in a Senate district, in a second Senate
that
district
actually
primary.
Was high. I was more than I thought. What happened was Gwen Moore was up for Congress, you know, that seat in 2004.
Yeah.
And a Democratic group used that area as a trial run for November. So they boosted her out significantly. In 2014, another Senate seat next door, in my years, right, 13,000 votes. That's kind of like all you, that's both sides in a multi-candidate primary. That's it. So this
first,
is August.
The first one, the 6,000 or 7,000 votes, is the next senator.
And what's going to drive voter turnout? I mean, John Chisholm is facing a primary challenge possibly. So, but is there a big race on the ballot, not that I'm seeing right now. If Gwen gets in the primary challenge, you got one from Gary George in 2014,
yeah.
Maybe. But otherwise, it could be, 12,000 people, that could be it.
In a Senate district mm-hmm. that has about 165,000. Okay, time for WisPolitik stock report, rising.
So Senate ads. So we knew it was going to come eventually, but the ad war
US
is
Senate
actually
ads.
Firing up. What's interesting is it kind of stayed quiet until the primary was done, the presidential primary, but now you saw Americans for Prosperity went up, going after, you know, or praising Ron Johnson. Remember, Johnson's poll numbers, not that great because 40% roughly, most polls we've seen don't have an opinion of him. If you're an incumbent after 5 years, that's an issue.
The FP ad by 1 million?
1.1 million, they said digital.
Okay, excuse me, go ahead.
So that's supposed to boost his pauses, if you will, boost his name ID. Let America Work, pro-Johnson super PAC, That's going after Feingold about foreign policy, trying to tie him to what they use the weakness of President Obama's foreign policy. Feingold answered with a biographical ad about he's been in 72 counties in the state, listening to people. One part being a rep is not telling people what to do, but listening to them. Kind of his own biographical piece to kind of remind people that, you know, hey, I'm still around, been in 72 counties, I listened to you, there for you kind of thing. Now he's got a new ad out this week responding to the foreign policy ad with a veteran saying that he's got a tough and risky plan to protect America. And oh, by the way, the NRSC, it says it reserved $2 million of time for the fall for Johnson. Now, reserving and spending...
That's a Republican Senate campaign committee.
Yeah. Reserving spending...
That's pro-Johnson money.
Yes. Two different things. Or anti-Feingold, one of the two.
Okay.
But again, reserving, spending, two different things. So we'll see. But we're seeing it. Now, the interesting is the timing. So, okay, primary's done. Will this burn stuff into people's memories? Remember, the old rule of thumb was come July, August, they're not paying attention.
So right.
People June... Once school is out,
holiday, yeah.
So can you burn a message in now and get their attention, and then you go heavy now, go light in the summer, then fire it back up in September? Or what are you going to do? And also, there's a thought that for Johnson to kind of get outside help, big outside help, he needs conservatives to see a path to victory, and to do that, you need better poll numbers. So maybe AFP is kind of out there prodding right now to try and move his numbers up. That way they'll say, hey, this is a good investment come September, October.
It's a great time to own a Wisconsin TV station from these ad revenues.
Is there ever a bad time to own?
Not anymore with the current cycle, 24/7, yeah. 365. Okay, mixed?
Donald Trump. So it has been national news about the wrangling over delegates that he has won, but are to end up being Cruz supporters. It's undercutting his support for the convention, if you will, because a lot of states, what happens is, yes, in the first vote in Cleveland, you have to
vote for
your guy.
Yes.
But after that, you're a free agent. Now, we're assuming this for this exercise, we have a contested convention. There is still a path for Donald Trump, although a narrow one, to win outright the nomination.
Which was helped by his victory in New York.
Or get so close that enough free agents, the Republican Party, say, okay, we're going to help this guy out. Let's just be done with it.
Right.
But if it doesn't, now you're talking the circus comes to town. In a lot of states, Cruz has done a great job organizing the ground level to get these people like, hey,
Colorado, Wyoming,
you're a Cruz guy, but you're a Trump delegate. Remember that. After that first vote, you can come to me. In right. Wisconsin, we're seeing signs after the delegates were chosen for the congressional district level that Trump didn't organize here either, but it doesn't really matter in Wisconsin because you're bound to your guy unless either he or she gets less than a third of the vote in any floor vote or you're released. Well, Donald Trump's not going to release you. You're six delegates he won, and he's not going to get below a third of the vote, we don't think. Unless it's all over the crying. So it doesn't matter in some ways, but it gets another sign this disorganization, if you will, of the Trump campaign at the state level, the local level, this campaign.
Well, he has been, the Cruz campaign has out-organized him in terms of the nuts and bolts on the ground, Wyoming.
And now you're seeing Colorado. Trump try to be better organized, bring people in, try and play that game he hasn't played so far.
Yeah, and he's beginning to send messages. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that I said then, and now I can be presidential. Falling?
Ed Wall, I started to laugh because what did Trump say this week? I can be so presidential you won't believe it.
Yes, yes. Okay, but go back. Falling.
Ed Wall, so former corrections secretary, kind of politely asked to leave, if you will, or that's the impression we got from corrections because of the problems with youth
Hills.
Prison.
Yes.
Went back to a job at DOJ, sent a letter to the governor's chief of staff, said, oh, by the way, you should tear this up, essentially.
Feel free to shred this to escape the open records law.
Public record, they didn't like that, and he just got canned. Now he's suing, going to file a whistleblower lawsuit, I believe, but it's just not a good, it's a quick fall from grace, if you will, that he had, it seemed like a soft landing for him to go to DOJ, which is where he worked before, and had civil service protection that he could go back to a job and have one. But from the day he got there, it was like, what do you do with this guy? We don't want him
there. He was on paid leave at $107,000, I think, a year, which is a living wage.
And now saying, actually has to destroy a public record, that's enough to get rid of you, so you're gone.
Okay. Well, he's a good candidate for falling. Before we go away, WisPolitics start talk to the incoming president of WEAC, Ron Martin. Mm-hmm. Is he a...
Eau Claire middle school teacher? Right?
Yes, okay. He said something interesting about the potential merger with AFT.
That's off the table.
Off the table.
Remember, 2+ years ago, they started these talks because the unions have basically, I mean, they've lost roles big time. They're down from where they were before. This was an option, if you will, to kind of combine and build strength, but their, you know, remaining turf wars, due structure, organization, So the leadership brought this to the membership, and they went, we're not ready for this.
Okay.
That was 2 years ago. There's been almost nothing said about it since then. I've checked, called, anything going on? What's going on? No word. He kind of put kibosh on and said, look, the recommendation's off. We're done.
That's fascinating. So Ron Martin becomes the WEAC president on, I think,
August 1st.
August 1st. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.